Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Sophie Temple. Sophie is a final year doctoral researcher specialising in eating disorders, disordered eating and body image, including body dissatisfaction and body appreciation during the menopausal transition. Sophie's research focuses on how menopausal quality of life impacts these factors, utilising both qualitative and quantitative methodologies. This week, we speak all about the research that Sophie has been completing as part of her PhD and really highlight the importance of body appreciation on quality of life for women going through the menopause. We also highlight the fact that often in conversations, the menopause is seen as a negative experience, and we don't often speak about the new chapter that this is opening up for women and the positivities that this can bring. I really hope that you enjoy this episode, and I really enjoyed the conversation with Sophie, which has opened my mindset up into how I can support women in my life that are going through the menopause at the moment.
Well, Sophie, it's so lovely to have you on the podcast. I feel like we've got to know each other quite quickly over the past few months.
Yeah.
Pretty lovely.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, it's been lovely, obviously, with the body image treatment clinic doing some bits and then being here as well to have, I feel like we had such a good chat over a minute or so on there. It's nice to have a bit of a longer chat on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I always feel when you do like Instagram lives, it's like you need to condense everything into 5 minutes, which is not the easiest thing to do. So having a bit of a longer chat on the podcast is always good.
Yeah.
But did you want to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, definitely. So my name's Sophie. So I'm in my final year of my PhD. I'm finishing in October, fingers crossed. And I'm exploring body image and disordered eating in relation to menopausal quality of life. So how symptoms impact women's quality of life during the transition, and then how those factors impact both the positive and negative aspects of body image, and then also eating behaviors, eating attitudes, and then also individuals who have maybe a pre-existing eating disorder risk, how then that can affect those individuals when they enter the menopausal transition as well.
I think that's amazing. I mean, maybe it's because my mum is at the age of going through the menopause, or I don't know whether there is like more conversation around it over the past years, but it definitely feels like the conversation is opening up. But I still think there's a lot of, I guess, misunderstanding or stigma and pressure on women to kind of remain a certain way. And I can imagine the impact that then has on, you know, body image and eating behaviours. It's such a difficult thing to go through.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, when I started, obviously it was nearly a few years ago now, I remember, you know, looking at the literature, and there was literally one or two papers, I think, relating to eating disorders or even disordered eating during the menopause. And you think, with everything else we supposedly know about, you know, women's health and menopause, the fact, you know, there's lots of research on perimenopausal depression and anxiety and mood swings and a lot of these kind of biological perspectives on mental health and menopause. The fact that there was just nothing on eating disorders, disordered eating, maladaptive eating, it was just, yeah, it was a bit mind-blowing. So I feel like it's nice to see those kind of more general media articles coming out as well, and LinkedIn posts and people having conversations. It doesn't feel as just restricted to hot flushes, and that's the only symptom people discuss now. It's nice to see it more in sort of mainstream media as well, and not just those kind of research articles now. But yeah, that ones that weren't even there when I started my PhD. Yeah. So
I feel as well, like, you know, a few years ago it was a very taboo subject, or kind of like, I mean, I obviously don't work in the corporate environment anymore, but when I did, it was kind of, you know, if a woman was struggling with things like her memory or hot flushes in the work environment, it was kind of like, oh, for God's sake, like, you know, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Where I think nowadays there is a lot more compassion and understanding of, you know, how intense the symptoms of menopause can be.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, so we did an interview study recently, and I think it's obviously it was both a great experience and also a really kind of mind-blowing experience in the way of, you know, hearing about all these really positive experiences that women do have in menopause. So I think it's obviously important to note that we're not assuming this is a negative transition for all people, because it's really not. Like, my mum didn't even know she had been through the menopause and she had no symptoms at all. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's great, you know. So yeah, but then other conversations where, you know, women were speaking about at work, just even if they didn't kind of experience those cognitive symptoms, like maybe brain fog, but in the back of their mind being so conscious in case they experienced the hot flush or sweating, or, you know, just being hyper aware of how their clothes were fitting or hyper vigilant about how their body had changed. It's not necessarily just those physical symptoms, but your kind of perception and awareness of any changes. And I think, yeah, it's a lot psychologically to manage when you're also trying to do a 9-to-5 job and just function well with the job you're actually doing, to have that going on in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go into kind of your research and what you found, I'm really interested, because you said that your mum didn't experience menopause. What was it that got you interested in looking into menopause and then wanting to do a PhD on it?
I think for me, I've always had a real interest in women's health. I think personally, I've had some experiences within kind of healthcare and medicine where I very much myself noticed that lack of education and awareness about women's health specifically. And I think then again, just through my interest in research, looking at then menopausal populations and seeing how there really wasn't anything to do with that body image and disordered eating. It was almost like when you feel like really passionate to fight against that ignorance in a way. I think it was something that came from that, in terms of, I know I've experienced these sort of negative effects of lack of awareness and education, and I wouldn't want any other women to go through that, regardless of what age, what stage of life, what phase of life. So I think it was something that came from a broader interest in women's health, that then when I noticed there was that gap in menopause, I was really interested in. And my supervisor at the time, her specialty was menopause, and I'd done a lot of work in eating disorders, disordered eating. So it was almost like that merge of those two passions.
No, that's really cool, and really nice to hear like how passionate you are about helping other women. I think it's that's really lovely to hear. So do you want to tell us a bit about the research that you've done and what the focuses have been throughout your PhD?
Yeah, definitely. So as I briefly mentioned at the start, so we're using scales which look at menopausal quality of life. So a lot of other research has primarily focused on menopausal symptom severity. So, you know, scales of sexual, physical, psychosocial, vasomotor symptoms, and then exploring that in relation to body dissatisfaction or eating pathology. Whereas what we're trying to do is look at how those symptoms impact women's subjective perception of their quality of life. Because just because someone has, you know, severe symptoms, it doesn't mean that that's negative impacting their quality of life, and thus it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to lead to that disordered eating and maladaptive eating. You know, if someone has a real great awareness of sort of coping strategies, or they have, you know, a great degree of body appreciation or certain personality factors, even, there's lots of things that could mean that someone isn't necessarily negatively impacted by menopausal changes. So that's why we're kind of looking into that specific subset of, okay, if you are specifically negatively impacted by these symptoms, how does that affect your eating and body image? And then my other supervisor, Gemma Whitcomb, she's amazing. She does so much body image research, and she suggested looking into not only body dissatisfaction, but also body appreciation. Because again, you know, we don't just want to assume that it's all about negative changes in your body image, because for many women, there are those positive changes as well. So we started incorporating measures of body appreciation as well. Yes, it's quite like a balance of different outcomes.
I love that because I think, you know, so often when we talk about menopause, it is focusing on the negatives of, you know, the impact that it has and the symptoms and the way that your body changes and stuff like that. And I know, I mean, I've only really witnessed my mum's experience of the menopause. And whilst it's been tricky at times, I think it's the first time that she's actually appreciated her body and actually come into sort of like, you know, this is my body and I'm going to accept it and I'm going to appreciate it and I'm going to actually nurture it in a way that it deserves. But I guess 100%. From your research, what would you say have, you know, been the biggest impacts on quality of life? I guess, you know, as you said, from both the positives and the negatives.
I think for me, one of the things that stands out is there's that clear link between the hormonal influences, I think, on eating behaviour during the menopause, because I think a lot of the individuals we're looking at in our research, it's not people with a clinical diagnosis of an eating disorder. It might be someone who's never experienced any issues with their relationship with food, any disordered eating, would seemingly outwardly have a very normal relationship with food, and then it's when those hormones change during the menopause that suddenly get really intense cravings, really intense urges. They might be struggling with binge eating, or because of those hormones their body might change in ways that they're not used to, and then suddenly they become dissatisfied with their body within a very short period of time, which can then trigger those kind of eating changes. So I think the hormonal influence seems to be very, very significant in dictating that very sudden, that very, I guess, loss of sense of control over eating for a lot of women, which I think for anyone would, you know, it's something that would be difficult, I think, to know how to manage if you've never experienced a change like that before, regardless whether it was your eating, your body image, or whatever aspect of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's what, you know, anecdotally, when I've heard women speak about their experiences of the menopause, it has been like overnight my body changed.
And yeah,
I had no idea what was going on. And, you know, I was eating the same as I used to, I was exercising in the same way. And then all of a sudden I didn't recognize myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, as you said, for anybody, that would be very overwhelming. And it's interesting, actually, that you mentioned, you know, not only people who have maybe had a history of disordered eating or eating disorders, but also people that have never really struggled with disordered eating, then developing symptoms. As I've had quite a few people reach out on the podcast and say, please, can you talk more about women who, you know, have had a good relationship with food their whole life, and consider when they get older, that's when they then start to struggle, because so much of the conversation focuses on younger women.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's quite interesting that you brought that up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things I would say to people like who've experienced that or encouraged to do is have that self-compassion and kindness and being gentle with yourself, because I think it's very easy, especially in our society, to attribute those things, maybe if your eating isn't aligned with a way that you normally feel comfortable with, to then get very self-critical or, you know, feel a lot of shame and guilt. But actually, you know, during the menopause, it's a very natural hormonal change. It's a natural part of our lives. So if your body is dictating your eating in certain ways, that's not something through just willpower or kind of outthinking it that's going to change. And I think if we can try and approach that with more just compassion and empathy and understanding, and maybe gently adjusting your eating, if that's something you want to do to feel better, doing that from a positive place rather than a place of being self-critical. Because yeah, at the end of the day, I think it's very, very difficult to argue with your biology and your hormones and these urges, because it's just a natural part of the female life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like, on the conversation of hormones, have you like done any research or like looked into what those hormonal changes are that actually happen in a woman's body?
I mean, not for mine personally, but there's definitely been a lot of research out there. I mean, some of the papers, obviously, you know, you have your appetite regulating hormones, leptin and ghrelin, and there are a lot of papers which show how the menopausal transition, it does directly affect those appetite regulating hormones. So they're responsible for signalling to you when you're full and also just when you're satisfied psychologically. So there is definitely evidence which shows there is that biological element. I just think that within our society, eating is always framed in such a way that's tied to your self-worth and discipline and identity that I think sometimes the kind of biological evidence of, yeah, here, this is actually what's happening to the body during menopause on an endocrinological level, that what you're experiencing with your eating is normal. The dialogue doesn't seem to be that. It just seems to be, oh, you're experiencing issues with your eating. Okay, let's see how we can stop that so you can lose weight. So it's almost that weight loss intervention narrative, which, yeah, I think can just be so harmful. So I think the more research awareness we can get on the topic, the better, really.
Yeah. And that was what I was going to say was, in a lovely world where diet culture wasn't as rife as it is, you know, we could sit here and say, oh, you know, when you're experiencing the menopause, it's important to have self-compassion and realize that it's a process that, you know, every woman will go through, and, you know, it's a difficult thing. But actually, when we're living in the society that we do, I feel like it, you know, it is a natural response for a woman to think, what can I do? Like, what medication can I have? In order to prevent the symptoms that I so often hear scaremongering that are associated with menopause. And yeah. You know, I've heard so many women say things about like HRT and like, well, I don't want to go on to HRT because it's going to cause weight gain. And it really upsets me that the main thing or the main worry that people have about going into the menopause is the way that their body's going to change.
I know.
It's not to do with, you know, there are those symptoms that you mentioned, like hot flushes and brain fog and things like that. But I think the biggest fear that people have is my body's going to change. And honestly, I think, like, how do we even go about changing that when we're living in a society that's so obsessed with weight?
I know. And this is exactly that something came up within one of our interviews. One of the participants summed up so nicely when talking about this issue. And she just said, yeah, if you could just, you know, fix Western society, that would be great. Because, you know, in a lot of Eastern cultures, you know, they don't even have a word for menopause. I think in Japan, there isn't a word for menopause. You know, it's not really a thing. You know, it's just what happens when you get to that age, whereas there seems to be so much emphasis and so much focus on how your body changes when you get to menopause. It's not even around celebrating, you know, getting to a certain age or being a certain age, or awareness of, okay, generally these are some of the things you might experience. That's not a good or a bad thing. You know, if you experience it, here's where you can seek support if you need it. It seems to be either extremely one way in terms of extremely overly medicalized and overly negative, or very, very focused on just diet and diet culture and kind of losing weight. It seems to have these very specific areas where it's very, very focused, and kind of any general area in between or balance is sort of lost.
I think that's just like, that is society in general, isn't it? Mm. I mean, I always find it funny, the word balance, like what the hell does that even mean anyway?
Mm.
But, I mean, nobody can find balance because we're so black and white in our thought processes that balance, I think, is so hard to get to. But I guess one thing I'm kind of interested in, when you spoke to your participants within your studies, how did they navigate things like changing in bodies and the, you know, potential weight gain or whatever happened? Because I feel like, yeah, when you're actually in it, it can be very different to, you know, maybe thinking about how it's going to be or providing advice.
I think a couple of things come to mind. One participant was saying how, I think it was only when she was speaking with her counsellor, how she'd never considered the menopause as actually a significant life transition. To her, it had only been, as you say, a time where you experience hot flushes. Whereas within counselling, she was sort of saying how she was helped to realise that as a period of your life, this can be quite a significant change of, you know, an identity shift, changes in how you're perceived by society, changes in kind of a sense of belonging within yourself that is more than just those symptoms, which again kind of links to that quality of life we were talking about. It's those deeper factors and how they influence your experience of life, just not just a measure of severity. And I think for her, taking just a step back and realizing, oh, actually, yeah, this is a big transition, there are lots of changes going on, if I am struggling, and if I am struggling with XYZ, that is okay. How can I sort of, again, approach this from a compassionate and understanding perspective, not, again, that self-critical kind of manner, which I think we're conditioned to. And then another couple of individuals that come to mind were sort of saying how they tried to kind of actively go against that almost expectancy of body dissatisfaction. So one person was saying they joined new like dance clubs that they had never tried throughout their whole life and really wanted to. And, you know, the fact it was open to all age groups and all abilities and just being exposed to lots of different bodies at lots of different ages and there just being that sense of community was really helpful in fostering that body appreciation and just reducing, I think, that negative voice, which says, you know, your body's changing this way, you can't do this, or you've reached this certain age, you shouldn't be doing this. So I think actively realizing it's happening and like doing the opposite, basically.
Yeah. Kind of like rebelling against
whatever
society says that you should do. But I mean, I think that's such a valid thing in terms of, you know, we have this sort of expectation of, I guess society has this expectation of like women get to a certain age and then they shouldn't be doing this sort of like different things and what have you. And I guess, did you find when you were talking to participants that, I guess, having more of like a body appreciation stance of things, was that kind of supportive in terms of managing or, I guess, navigating those symptoms? Did it have a big impact or...
I think it was very variable between each individual, and I completely understand why for some people, if you are really entrenched in that body dissatisfaction combined with certain symptoms negatively impacting your quality of life, combined with kind of trying to manage how you're perceived by society, the thought of then trying to say, oh, actually, yeah, I really appreciate my body, it's not realistic. So actually, probably, and this kind of aligns with the other research we've done, is reducing that body dissatisfaction initially and kind of increasing women's awareness of maybe how, you know, societal ageism, stigma and taboo around menopause, you know, weight stigma, all these things in Western society, raising their awareness of that so that they can reject that and be empowered to kind of, yeah, realize how they might have been influenced. And then you sort of maybe bring in those positive aspects, because I completely understand that, yeah, when, if you're experiencing all of those things together, to suddenly start just appreciating your body, it's not just going to be a switch, is it? So I think it's something you need to address from both angles, you know, reducing that body dissatisfaction if it's there, acknowledging it, but also trying to bring in those positive aspects. And one of the things a few of the participants was discussed was focusing on the functionality of their body. So again, like trying new sports or, you know, exercising for the first time, going to the gym for the first time, having that focus on kind of functional achievement seemed to be really positive.
Yeah. And when you were talking there about like trying new exercise, I guess one thing that came to my mind, and I guess this wouldn't be the case for every woman, but I feel like, and again, it's anecdotally in terms of talking about my mum's experience, because that's the only one I've had, but for me, it felt like this kind of progression has been kind of understanding who she is and also then doing stuff for herself, because she's always either done stuff for the family or for her business or her career or what have you. And then actually it feels like, you know, she's finally stepped into this moment of being like, I do stuff for me and I'm going to enjoy it and things like that. And, you know, I am very grateful to her as my role model, because I'm looking at her thinking, well, I don't want to wait until I'm, you know, mid-50s until I start doing things for me. I want to do that now. But I wonder if kind of, you know, making space for yourself and almost, you know, prioritizing you rather than always putting other people first would help to navigate those kind of emotions that come up with the menopause.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's huge. You know, there's a lot of research which focuses on empty nest syndrome. So kind of parents feeling lost or experiencing low mood when their children leave home. But actually, as you say, you've got the complete opposite of that, whether it's your children actively leaving home or whether that's, if you don't have children, just a reduction maybe in caregiving responsibilities to, you know, whether it's a partner, whether it's another family member, whoever, that can be a really liberating time to kind of reflect on what you want. And yeah, you know, if you've been a parent, completely understand why a lot of the time you're not going to have the capacity for that. You've got so many things going on that's not necessarily going to be at the forefront of your mind. So I think, yeah, again, it's highlighting that this time can actually be really positive for some people, and it can encourage that self-reflection and, you know, whether it's changing jobs, whether it's, as you say, starting exercise, whether it's just kind of starting to embrace the fact that you can do things that you want to in the future because you don't have those responsibilities. Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting one as well, because I'm just thinking about, I mean, I think me and you are probably a similar age, but I'm just thinking about like my mum's generation, and in terms of, I guess, just how different my mindset is about me and me being a woman and my independence and things like that in, and my body in comparison to my mum. And I guess this is slightly off topic, but just reflecting on how that generation were so heavily subject to diet culture in a very obvious, what we now see as obvious, but always having to be you know, very slim and always on the diet, losing weight. And I think those messages became so ingrained that actually what you were saying before in terms of like recognizing that kind of maybe internalized stigma and then kind of fighting against it, I think that it's interesting. I feel like our generation is so much more aware of that because we've seen it in, you know, the generation before us.
But
the difficulty of kind of unpicking all of that to be like, wow, this, all of this internalized stigma that I've got that's also applied to myself, and then realizing actually that you're holding all of that and now it's time that you maybe want to release all of that.
Yeah, 100%. And it sounds like I was in a very similar position in terms of yourself. You know, my mum was the same, had similar experiences with kind of disordered eating and body image, and like, she won't mind me saying this, she's very open about it now, but I think part of her kind of growth and recovery was understanding those outside factors. And it was the same, you know, for me in terms of rejecting some of those things that I might have observed through them, in thinking, oh, okay, actually, just because that's the closest role model you maybe have in your environment, you start to kind of connect the dots a little bit and see, oh, okay, actually, there are these different ways of doing things. There are these different thought patterns. And I think, yeah, we are very lucky in our generation that there seems to be a much better level, I think, of awareness and celebration of different body types and, you know, and diversity and inclusivity. You know, it's definitely not perfect, but I think it is getting better. So I think, yeah, we are lucky in that sense. And I appreciate for everyone, it's not going to be as easy as it was for us, you know, to maybe challenge those things, because we've had more media and more representations and more information, I think, available to us to be able to challenge that at a younger age.
Yeah, I think this is slightly off topic, but I feel like our generation has been given the skills to challenge things and almost has the confidence too, whereas, you know, maybe my mum's generation didn't have that. So I'm, as you said, I think we're very lucky and I'm extremely grateful that kind of we now do have that. But just wondering, in terms of like the research that you've been doing and things like that, what are the hopes that you have for your research in terms of the impact that has on, you know, maybe menopausal awareness going forwards?
I think I'd love to see it sort of slowly start to seep into kind of public knowledge. I would love it to just, you know, obviously my research individually, but also just generally menopause awareness, eating, body image, just to kind of seep into mainstream media more and more panel discussions, more podcasts, more resources in healthcare settings, you know, more support groups. Because I think, you know, a lot of the time, and I've been in this position before, when you're experiencing something, you don't necessarily realize you're struggling with it because you don't really have a point for comparison of how it could be better. So I think growing sort of awareness and the availability of support resources and information through social media is a very gentle way of exposing women to an alternative way of thinking and behaving and being and practicing their eating and body image and relationship with themselves that isn't too, you know, kind of overwhelming. So I think if we can provide those resources and opportunity for support, even if women read something and it resonates with them, but actually it takes a few months or a year before they realize, oh, okay, actually that could apply for me and I'd like to seek some of that support or some of that help, or I'd like to learn about that, at least you're providing an opportunity for that sort of initial seed to be sown. So yeah, kind of a broad overview of what I'd like, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think one thing that like really stood out to me was the fact that you've looked at, I guess, the positives that can come alongside it as well. Mm. And I think, you know, sharing more about that in terms of the positive experiences that women have had when they've entered menopause and things like that, because I think so often it is massively feared. People are absolutely terrified of the changes that are going to happen and the symptoms, but talking more about the positive experiences that women have had, and you know, I'm sure that for some people it's an absolutely excruciatingly horrific time, but equally I would hope that there will be people that have had positive experiences as well, and so sharing all of that rather than having people, you know, chronically worried for because I know even I sometimes I'm like that. I'm like, oh my god, like I'm really worried about getting to menopause because of happen, and you know,
100%.
It really be worrying for that longer length of our life when actually, as you said, it's a new chapter in life, and that can, you know, open positive doors as well as
the... Well, 100%. I was reading a LinkedIn post that I can't remember who it was by. The other day that was sort of saying in a lot of other cultures, when you get your first grey hair, that's an absolute celebration. And it's like an exciting moment to look forward to because aging is associated with wisdom and experience and knowledge and respect and all these wonderful things that I think within our culture just seem to be really missed and overlooked a lot of the time. And I think it does, you know, I think seeing those differences helps you kind of take a step back and then realize that cultural norms aren't necessarily truth. They are just what you've been exposed to. As you say, whether that's related to menopause or aging generally, there are many, many positive experiences to be had, which, yeah, I think deserve as much attention as the issues and the struggles. So, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. And would you say, do you have any advice for women if they're maybe coming up to the menopause or going through it in order to, I don't want to say shift their mindset because I don't just want to sit here and be like, oh, just be positive.
yeah, of course.
It'd be the worst thing to do. But if there's any like spaces or communities that you found through your research that people could maybe get involved in.
Yeah, I think, I mean, is it interesting? A participant actually said this similar thing in one of our studies, in that if you can sort of have that relationship with yourself well established by the time you get to menopause. So whether there's things, you know, in your past where, you know, throughout your life they've sort of been niggling at the back of your brain, and you think, okay, maybe I need to see someone about this, maybe I just need to have a general conversation with a friend about this, or a parent or a trusted person, to kind of work through some of those psychological experiences that you might have been carrying throughout your life, or, you know, whatever it might be. If you can have those sort of addressed in some form by the time you get to menopause, I'm not necessarily saying that that will be therapy or counselling for anyone, it could just be a simple discussion, then if you do get to menopause and then you experience those other changes on top, if they are negative, then at least you sort of have a degree of self-awareness and experience with maybe dealing with challenging experiences in the past. So you're almost prepared and aware, and you have that positive relationship with yourself to a degree where you know where your weaknesses might be. So if you do experience symptoms, you kind of know where to focus. But again, that's not assuming for everyone that you will have bad experiences, but I guess it's just kind of, in case you do, it's not sort of you're trying to deal with everything at once, I suppose, because as we know, you know, there's so many sort of different domains of experiences you can have. It would be a lot to sort of try and manage if all of those kind of onset very suddenly at the same time, which for some women that can happen, obviously, during menopause.
Yeah. I saw something on LinkedIn the other day, and it's slightly different to what we're talking about, but I think the main point still stands. And it said something about the best promotion that you'll ever get is stepping into your authentic self.
Mm.
And I feel like that just, it rings so true here, in that if you are able to develop that relationship with yourself where you are, you know, content within yourself, irrespective of thinking about like what other people think about you, or, you know, the way that your body is perceived or things like that, then when these changes happen, you know, you can see them with a more positive light, because it's, as you said, it's stepping into wisdom or experience and things like that, rather than, you know, if your self-worth is tied up into how your body looks, then obviously if that changes, then that's going to impact the way that you have a relationship with yourself. I mean, that I think is, I'm not saying that, oh, you know, step into your authentic self and then menopause will be a breeze and, you know, you won't be impacted by the way that your body's changing. But I think, you know, as you said, it's about making that experience kind of as manageable and as positive.
Yeah.
And I think community can be so powerful within that as well. Like, I know for my mum, when she actually started talking about what was going on, that changed things so much, because she realized that other people were going through similar things as her. It wasn't just her on her own, and actually it's kind of like her and a little army of friends now facing the menopause rather than on her own.
Definitely. And I think as well, you know, talking about it, you know, woman to woman is just as powerful as, you know, having an organized sort of mental health support group, you know, talking about that between friends, or just being open with your friends, trying to be vulnerable with people you trust. It feels difficult initially. I think it feels uncomfortable because, again, we've been taught that this is a very taboo subject and we couldn't talk about it. But those small decisions are very small acts of rebellion against that wider kind of societal stigma that, yeah, if you can see a friend is, you know, is struggling or has changed, or if a friend seems to be, you know, really glowing or really happy, and having those conversations and kind of really talking about what's going on during menopause, I think can help with that, facilitating that wider discussion. Because again, you know, a lot of women I've spoken to, it's sort of, they might make flippant comments with their friends about being menopausal, but it's almost very much kind of dismissed. Mm-hmm. Those kind of more vulnerable conversations are lacking, because I think a lot of women think they won't be taken seriously, and I think that does come a lot from society, which then we sort of project onto our interactions with our friends as well, which is perfectly normal. But I think if we can just do those little acts of having those conversations with people we trust, it can help the kind of holistic conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Sophie. It's honestly been such a pleasure. I do not know where the last 45 minutes I'm talking. So yeah, thank you so much. It's been so lovely to chat to you. Is there anyone
thank you for having me
can go to if they want to read more of your research and find out more about the your PhD that you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, Sophie Temple, so I post kind of research updates and general, I guess, menopause, body image eating awareness posts. So yeah, definitely on there. And equally, you know, if there are people that want to chat about certain things we've discussed in more depth, you know, I love my PhD and my research, and I'm more than happy to kind of talk about it as well in a bit more of a personal context and outside just kind of research papers. So yeah, if feel free if anyone wants to kind of chat about that more generally. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, so.
Amazing. And I'll put your LinkedIn in the show notes as well so that people can
thank you. Thank you so much, Hannah.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.